Hey, on the ball, we're out of the man cave, aka my apartment, and we're recording from the home of the North Texas Blues at the Staggering Irishman. This week, we talk Premier League results, the Clásico, German Bundesliga, and racism in football. We're on the ball. Well, hey, and we're here at the Staggering Irishman, here in Addison, ready for the On the Ball Soccer Podcast. With me this week, with me and Gia this week, West Overstreet, back for probably fourth week in a row. Lost count.
Yeah, fourth or fifth week.
Today we have a very special guest, obviously that you arranged for this show. Brian Jones from the North Texas Blues will be with us to talk about his passionate love for Chelsea Football Club ahead of this crunch game with Manchester City this afternoon.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. It's, I guess, the thing we're trying to do now, just meet with like some of the local clubs, get the local supporters on so they can talk about their clubs, people that are really passionate about the EPL and maybe even other leagues here in the Dallas area. So it's good publicity for them, and we get some people that are really love the sport here in the United States.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, we're stretched for time in some way before today's kickoff. We'll go on to the Clásico, the big game. The big game in Spain.
Starring your favorite.
Starring my favorite. my favorite player, Neymar.
Neymar Jr.
Barcelona opened up a 4-point lead at the top of La Liga by overcoming rivals Real Madrid at the new camp, or camp now, however you want to pronounce it. Neymar's low finish and a sublime chip by Alexis Sanchez sent Real to second defeat in four league games. Interestingly enough, Barcelona have won their past 20 home matches in La Liga, a run stretching 12 months. Did you see the game? What were your views on it?
First, I'd like to give props to the crowd at Barcelona for the Forza Tito sign before game, showing support of Tito Villanueva, who had to leave the team over the summer. Neymar was brilliant. I know that burns you just a touch. The goal set up by Iniesta, the left-footed. I mean, it took a little deflection, but it's still greatly placed. And then also the pass that led to Alexis Sanchez's lob over Diego Lopez. Another fine setup there with that through ball.
It was a beautiful finish by Sanchez.
One of the things that was kind of odd was the lineup that Ancelotti went with, having Sergio Ramos being that third holding midfielder, a position that he doesn't really play. Yeah. Then he also had, I believe, Cristiano Ronaldo as a central striker just open the game. So it was, I don't really know what Ancelotti was doing with that. That's just not one of his. I don't know if those types of oddball kind of tactical things are his specialty or something that he's really known for. That's more like of a Mourinho-esque move, or something like that.
He painted himself as the next Jose Mourinho.
Jose Mourinho. I mean, hopefully he doesn't have the same fate as Mourinho. But what do you think? I mean, there was no Isco.
There was no Isco. That's true.
That was
I thought Bale was disappointing again. And I know... That's right. And I know Ancelotti came out after the game and said, basically not to judge Bale too harshly, and he's just getting settled in a new city and new players, new team, that kind of thing. So
yeah, I mean, there was an article that I kind of glanced over, and maybe last week, I think Cristiano Ronaldo referred to the pressure would not help Bale. And this is a pretty big game to get your second start in, coming in off injury. It's a tough game. I don't know really if he played this high level of a game when he played for Tottenham. Yeah. The pressure, the Clásico, atmosphere at the Camp Nou.
Exactly.
Second start, I mean, that's quite a bit overwhelming.
We always remember when Bale was playing for Spurs and he went up and he took Maicon apart against Inter Milan. And then, but that's a different game entirely to a Clásico.
Absolutely.
Which I think you're right about.
Yeah, especially, I mean, you're playing with probably three of the biggest stars on the planet. And Messi's on the field with Neymar, Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, it's big. I mean, Iniesta.
Neymar's in your top three, is it?
Well, I mean, just star power. No, we're talking about star power. Well, that is 7. I mean, you know, I got to give him his props. I mean, he was the star of the match.
He was. He did look good, and I got several text messages. Just goal or Neymar or something. So.
Absolutely. That's what I was asking you. It's like, we're going to talk about Neymar today.
I was going to skip over it.
Skip over that. No classico.
But yeah, I thought it was a, for lack of a better word, boring classico. In all honesty, just my opinion watching the game. It wasn't quite as intense as it has been when it was that Mourinho and Pep kind of vibe.
You know? Yeah, I think just the way that Real Madrid kind of came out and set up, it made them real disorganized. It wasn't a formation that they were normally playing. It's weird that you would try something that oddball against one of the best teams in the world, the best team in your league, to come out with something like that, knowing that they're not going to alter their style at all to what you do, but yet you're trying to make these big changes to your style before the game.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, we expect Barcelona to win the league.
Absolutely. I mean, with 6 points up.
That's right. And with Real Madrid kind of stuttering, you think realistically Atletico could get that second spot by the end of the season or no?
It has that Atletico team going to play in the second half of the game when they've got a lot of games under their legs and things like that. We know that Real Madrid's going to have the depth to deal with that type of length with the lengthy season and being great or good for a complete season as opposed to just, you know, the first half of the season. So they have a shot. I mean, if Real Madrid keeps dropping points, they're definitely going to be in it.
That's true. From La Liga to the Bundesliga briefly, we're talking about former Liverpool loan signing Nuri Sahin scored as Borussia Dortmund kept up the pressure on leaders Bayern Munich by winning 3-1 at rival Schalke, who had obviously Chelsea had beaten in midweek in the Champions League.
Yeah, comfortably. I mean, Borussia Dortmund, they just continued the form that they showed against Arsenal. Obviously it's going to be a two-horse race there in the Bundesliga. I got to see some of the highlights of the game. I might go back and watch this game fully because I was impressed how the ability for Schalke to control the ball against Chelsea, even with Chelsea's midfield being as strong as it is, and how their fullbacks kept coming up the flanks, putting pressure on Chelsea. I really wanted to see this game just to see how they stacked up against Dortmund, another really kind of possession-controlled team. But from the highlights of what I saw, Dortmund handled them quite comfortably. And obviously their form in league hasn't quite been as good as it's been in the Champions League. So.
Yeah. I mean, Bayern Munich they remain top of the Bundesliga, 1 point ahead of Dortmund.
Yeah.
But Guardiola's team were made to work hard by running out 3-2 winners against Hertha Berlin at home at the Allianz Arena. I think you're right. Two-team league. But we'll see. Come the end of the season,
yeah,
whether Dortmund can keep the pressure really on Bayern at the top.
We'll see.
Now onto we mentioned the Champions League games obviously in midweek, and I know in the last podcast we talked about Tuesday's games. Wednesday's games threw up a few interesting results. I mean, Manchester United beating Real Sociedad was a big win for them. The four goals from our man Zlatan.
Zlatanator.
With four goals in a 5-0 win in Belgium at Anderlecht.
And I have to point out that I did say on the day previously that Zlatan was the best outright striker in the world.
You did.
He must have heard me, and he came true.
He did. He absolutely did. And yeah, it looks... PSG definitely look ominous right now.
Yeah.
Now, Man City in their win, obviously at CSKA in Moscow. This, you know, unfortunate the racism suffered by Yaya Toure. He came out and suggested that maybe black players would boycott the World Cup in Russia. You know, some managers. Mourinho came out and said that would be a bad idea because this is for the millions or the billions that love the sport, and you should concentrate on those people rather than a few thousand ignorant fans. Where does your point of view really?
I mean, something has to be done, and if firmer steps aren't taken to get something done, I mean, you can't control every idiot, and people are going to do dumb things, and people are going to say dumb things. And I mean, I've talked to friends from different parts of the world, and Germany, in particular, a friend that stayed in Russia
studied in Russia for a while, and they all said, I mean, it's different from the United States. Here we had like a civil rights movement. So there was a big push for equal rights, and people's lives and were put on the line. People died for it, and it's been a big move. So a lot of those things haven't happened in other countries. And so it's going to be difficult. I mean, so there's a big cultural and, I guess, historical context to why things are different kind of here in the United States and in some other countries in, where people of darker colored skin are more accepted. So it's something that's bigger than, you know, I mean, soccer's huge, but it's something that's kind of bigger than that. So it's going to be hard to inflect that kind of change simply through soccer. So you're not going to be able to stamp it out completely, obviously. But we have to take bigger steps. And if it comes to that, it's way too far in advance to say, don't play in Russia. Maybe the year of, 9 months out, it's something to think about. Yeah. Maybe a year out, 16 months out, it's something to think about. Not necessarily just to stop the World Cup from happening, but to put the pressure on FIFA to really get in there and really police, you know, the activity. I think that's where the pressure should lie, on what FIFA can do to try to dismiss that type of behavior. People getting out there and being more active in the stands with people that are acting that way, you know what I mean?
Yeah. What steps do you think could be done? I mean, the UEFA have charged CSKA Moscow with racist behavior of their fans, and also the controversy with the referee, not the Romanian referee, didn't failed to broadcast an appeal to the fans to stop the abuse. I mean, where do you think FIFA or UEFA can, what do you think they can do? I mean, we've talked about maybe closing half the stadium, and then the second offense is a full stadium closure.
You have to have stadium closures. You're gonna have to add, I think there's enough money in FIFA, in the major leagues, to, you're gonna have to add like maybe police or people actually in the stands to thwart some of the behavior. You know what I mean? I mean, it's unexcusable for them not to announce the racism that's happening, that it needs to be stopped. That makes no sense to me. That's what FIFA's biggest causes right now, and they're not standing up for it with the referees. Yeah. That has to happen. I know during the Champions League games, it happened during the Chelsea game. Like, the players are all like, they're moving the banner across, you know, stop racism. And when it was going through the Chelsea line, I think it got to Schürrle, and he's like, what is this? And like turns it around, he starts passing it backwards. You don't even see the message anymore. You see just like the black of the banner like passing through the Chelsea line. I'm like, how well did FIFA go out and communicate to the players, hey, make sure that the banner is, you know, facing the right way? It's just the little things like that. And when you see little things like that, you can kind of tell that they're making an effort on some level, but it's not an effort that's being like addressed every time, every game with the players. And it's something that has to happen that way, just because it takes that much effort to change such a big event or thought process.
And I think you're right. It's there's only so much FIFA and UEFA can do. At some point, it's an institutional problem within a certain country,
absolutely,
which their government has to really help out with.
And Russia's been a little hesitant on several fronts when it comes to accepting people for what they are and who they are.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely, yeah. But interestingly enough, the CSKA general secretary came out and said it was basically a witch hunt by Yaya Toure, and the British media exaggerating the story for than what it should have been, I suppose, which was outrageous enough, especially from a guy that was in the stadium at the time. We're going to take a quick break on the Ball Soccer podcast, and we will be right back. And we're back in the hot seat. We've been joined by another guest. Brian Jones, our Rolling Stone himself, is here with us.
Spelled differently, though.
Spelled differently, it is. From North Texas Blues. How you doing?
Cheers.
It's a debut cap for you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, no, it's working. And we're going to get on to Chelsea and the great stuff you guys do at the North Texas Blues.
Absolutely.
We'll come on to that. Premier League. Big day, obviously, yesterday, and there's no other place we can start, really, than some people's least favourite player in the world, Luis Suarez, managing four goals. Impressive enough. Luis Suarez scoring a hat-trick. as Liverpool kept the pressure on Arsenal at the top of the Premier League table with that convincing win at West Brom at Anfield. A penalty for West Brom in the second half, debatable. I don't know if you lads saw it. Scored by James Morrison, former Middlesbrough youngster.
Yeah, it was kind of soft.
It was a very soft penalty, yeah. I thought, to be honest.
Very, very soft.
It was. And then, yeah, former Chelsea, former Man City, the two teams playing today. Daniel Sturridge with a beautiful,
that was,
beautiful
chip. That was pretty.
Beautiful chip. Out from the outside of the 18-yard box, right?
Yeah, it was a stunning finish. Because we'll intertwine Chelsea stuff within here. What do both of you think about someone like Daniel Sturridge? At this point, when Chelsea are really struggling for a striker, they have Denver Barr, who doesn't really get a game. Samuel Eto'o is about 2 years past his best. I'm being a bit obnoxious here, a little bit. And Fernando Torres, where just when you think he's back, he's gone. What do you guys think of someone like...
You know,
like
I heard yesterday that Sturridge is the fastest Liverpool player to get to 20 goals, I think. He got there faster than Torres did. So, I mean, it didn't work at Chelsea. It didn't work at City. There's a reason for that. You know, I think scoring goals in different clubs is different. You know, you don't just walk into a side and expect to play where you want to play. So they played him on the wing at Chelsea.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, did the money with Torres have a lot to do with that? Yeah. But he also had Drogba in front of him, too. That's not the easiest guy to take over a position from. So,
not at all. You know. I feel for him.
Was it unfair? Sort of. Should we have kept him? No. I don't think so. I think his shoot-pass ratio, everything that he does... just moving the ball around. I mean, he shoots when he should pass. He passes when he should shoot. Is he doing well now? Yes, because he's in a side where he's fitting in better. He just didn't fit in.
Yeah.
I mean, it just happens.
Yeah, you know? Like I've said before, I think that Liverpool has given him the opportunity to play in the center. And they've given him more freedom to just shoot. I mean, if you watched the game yesterday, his goal was wonderful, but he took at least three other shots that were probably ill-advised. Yeah. Like, just... hacked it away, but I mean, they were incredible shots with a ton of pace, but they were just like from so far away and so most likely not going in. And they didn't go in.
I think playing him in the center and then also giving him that actual run of games, I mean, so important, because you're right. They had Drogba. I think Anelka was there at the time still, and still a good player at the time. Maybe not anymore, but
yeah. But I think going up leading up into that game, I think West Brom had won their last three times. They'd gone to Anfield.
Yeah, and Steve Clark,
that's unbelievable too.
Steve Clark, former Blue, and he was Kenny Dalglish's assistant, obviously at Liverpool before. But we think West Brom, they'll do all right this season. They're no danger or anything like that.
Oh, no, they're fine.
I wanted Anelka to score against Liverpool yesterday.
Yeah, he had a shot.
He did have a chance. The win leaves Liverpool in second, obviously behind Arsenal. West Brom remain 12th. Luis Suarez's hat trick was his fourth in the Premier League, but his first at Anfield. He's now scored a hat trick every 20.3 Premier League games, the best rate of all 46 players to have scored more than one hat trick.
Borderline unstoppable at this point. He's what, the second best scorer on his team right now, with Sturridge leading the league.
Now, and as impressive as Suarez is, and Sturridge, it's got to be crucially important that these guys stay fit. I mean, if you're a Liverpool fan.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and not having Coutinho on the side right now, they have to. There's no question. If they lose one of those guys, I think they're going to be in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. A quick one here, Brian. Where do you think Liverpool are going to really finish this season?
I think they got a shot of being top four, back in top four. I really do. At whose expense, I don't know. It's real tight right now, and it's so early, it's really hard to tell. I feel like that they've got momentum behind them right now, which is huge. People talk about momentum not being something in football or any sport, but I believe in it, and they have it, you know. And if they can continue to ride on that, I think Rodgers has them playing a very, very, very strong style of football. But crazier things have happened.
Yeah.
Teams go on streaks, they start losing, people get mad, Suarez gets banned, who knows?
Yeah, his next ban is at least half a season, at least, and he's going to do it.
And maybe on from Liverpool to Arsenal, who obviously set the Premier League alight really at the beginning of this season. They beat managerless Crystal Palace. And funny enough, on the podcast on Tuesday, we said that Ian Holloway wouldn't be in the job very much longer, and 24 hours later he was gone.
He was gone.
Despite having Mikel Arteta sent off, he did score a penalty, Arteta, and Giroud scored with 3 minutes left as Arsenal won. They looked pretty poor, I thought, Arsenal. Comparison of what they've looked at over the recent weeks, there was none of that tippy-tacky football.
Well, I think that carries over from the Champions League match. They didn't look very well against Dortmund. I mean, they struggled. I think the second half they played a little better, but they struggled, and I think that carried over to the weekend.
Yeah. And I think it would have knocked the stuffing out of you when Lewandowski scores like that in the last minute.
Oh,
yeah.
I know.
So, especially with this Arsenal team, really, you know, the build-up Wenger was talking about, how this is a better Arsenal team than last played Dortmund and everything like that. And giving them the build up, and then when you lose in the last minute like that, you think we're still not quite there yet. It's a bit.
You know, I think that their schedule so far too has been.
It's been pretty good.
It's
hasn't
been
it?
Pretty good. Been so terrible. I think they've got a huge really. Test in the next month, and that's really going to prove whether or not they're for real or not.
Well, they're play Napoli. They play. The best team in the world, Manchester United, and they play the third best team in the Premier League, Southampton. So who knows what's going to happen?
Chelsea big. League Cup Tuesday, but Mourinho's probably starting kids. So
yeah, probably starting kids. I mean, with this game, I mean Crystal Palace. I mean, I don't think they had won any contest against Arsenal in the past 34 years.
Yeah.
So I mean, they were expected to win, but obviously they played poorly. Giroud. He was a little. I thought he'd be a little more impactful in the game, seeing how the back line of Crystal Palace has played so far this year. He did go ahead and hit the winner, but I thought he'd be a little more impactful in the game. But I think Crystal Palace played very well, considering all. I mean, their place in the league. I think they're like second from the bottom. Mm-hmm. Defense was shockingly good. Begovic? I believe Begovic is their goalie.
But Begovic is it. Sunderland, isn't he?
Sunderland.
Where's Begovic at? He's at Sunderland, I think. I said Liverpool wanted him before Mignolet, and Arsenal wanted him as well. Oh, yeah, sorry, Begovic is at Stoke. What am I talking
about? Yeah, Stoke. Forgetting the goalie's name. He played very well. Stopped several.
His name's Speroni. I remember him because he always wears black long pants, and he was there when they first were in the Premier League. And then they had him in goal, and he was like. He went walkabout. Like, this dude was so crazy in goal. And Andy Johnson, I remember, was up front. And I remember him scoring, like, 20 goals that season. And I think 18 of them were penalties or something ridiculous.
Jake with the excellent save right there. Thanks, buddy.
No, it's all good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, Crystal Palace played a hell of a game, in my opinion, especially with Keith Billing taking over in Holloway's place. And wish they could have got a goal out of it. I mean, they hit the woodwork a couple of times, and then there were also two really good saves. But they're second from the bottom, and they're playing the best team in the Premier League right now.
Are they going down, Brian?
I picked them as the one to possibly stay up, actually.
Oh, really? Right.
Of the three that came, so I don't know. The manager thing, everything like that, is it does mess with teams, and to have it happen earlier in the season would have been better if they would have made the decision. Now I think it's kind of crucial on the side to, you know, you see what's happening with Sunderland, you see what's happening with, you know, with manager changes at this point in the season. You know, Sunderland pulled off a big win this morning, but they have 3 points, 4 points.
Yeah.
You know, that's manager changes, I don't know.
I think, and then, you know, Palace bought all those players. They lost their best player, Wilfried Zaha. Obviously went back to Man U after being half a season on loan. And Holloway's gone. They've got all these players, and none of them are really, I know, despite playing well yesterday, they're not really Premier League class.
Well, they spent some money over the summer, you
they
know?
They did, yeah.
Their chest pants wearing owner gave them some cash, and I thought that would be a surge for them. Honestly, after losing Zaha, I was hoping that some of those guys they brought in would kind of surge them out a little bit, but it didn't.
Yeah.
It's just not clicked as well as they've expected.
Well, moving on from Palace and Arsenal, my favorite subject, late headers by Wayne Rooney and Chicharito rescued Manchester United as the champions fought back 2-1 down to clinch a dramatic win over Stoke. Going into the game, Mark Hughes, obviously former Manchester United and Chelsea player, described United as vulnerable. Despite that, United getting the win. Did you guys see the highlights? What do you guys think about United? I mean, is it a case of champions play badly and win? Or
I think you guys need to really, in January, look for some defenders.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's the hole right now in the squad. You got Van Persie up top. Welbeck's come on as a great player in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
Y'all got the super sub, Chicharito?
But we do have Wayne Rooney. So.
Yeah, and Rooney yesterday he's always brilliant. Yeah. His work rate, I can't ever complain about the way that guy plays.
Yeah, absolutely not. Manchester United's victory over Stoke was the 25th Premier League game in which Robin Van Persie has scored. United have won 20 and drawn 5, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I think he's also scored, that was the 7th game in a row he scored against Stoke.
Yeah, yeah.
And finally Begovic. The goalie for Stoke City.
That's right. The win leaves Man U 8th on 14 points, 3 points or less from City and Chelsea. Stoke lay 17th outside the relegation zone, only on goal difference. Now, from a Manchester United game to the Ferguson book, and we spoke about it on the podcast last week. There's been a few responses from the book. For example, we spoke about last week Sir Alex Ferguson calling Steven Gerrard not a top player, which is kind of funny because he tried to sign him twice, I think. But Mourinho came out, I don't know if you saw the comments, and said, well, I can't wait to read the book at Christmas.
He said he's almost not ready to read the book because everybody's already reporting on it. He's like, you guys have ruined it for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. I can't talk about something I haven't read, but y'all told me everything about it. Should I read it or...?
And what about Brendan Rodgers coming out fiercely? I mean, he would defend Steven Gerrard, but...
As he should.
I mean, he brought up a point which was, should Ferguson be writing a book? You know, it's difficult for players to trust in a manager when they think, when he retires, he's going to write a book about it.
He threw every England legend under the bus. And it... not every, but yeah. I mean, there was... He was almost a flamethrower. I mean, it... There were some things, and I haven't read it, I'll say that. I've just seen the comments, and I think the best quotes I've seen on Twitter are the fake ones that everybody's making up.
Well, I understand that a bit, but I don't know if this book was such a bad idea to talk about the ex-player. Surely he's in his right. I mean, he's retired. I'm playing devil's advocate. But then on the other side, he's still a Manchester United employee. He's still a director. Thinking back on these comments this week, I was thinking it's almost like managerial mind games from the grave from Ferguson. That was kind of like,
absolutely.
Let's kind of because he talked about Gerrard. He talked about Henderson.
Oh yeah, Henderson.
Which is almost like destabilizing Liverpool, and he's taking a swipe at maybe trying to motivate Wayne Rooney in a certain way. I mean, so maybe these little digs at various people is still the mind games of Sir Alex Ferguson.
Yeah, I mean, like I said in the last podcast, it all rings true to what he's always done and how he's kind of always been. It didn't seem like he just went out of his way to do something that he wouldn't have normally done. It seemed like it was in character to what he's always done, the type of guy he's always been, the way he's always responded to questions, the way he's always responded to his players, responded to other players, questions about other teams' players. I think it just felt right in line with what he would normally do. So since it wasn't a stretch, in my opinion, everything that's come out has been, I've been kind of all right with it because it just felt like it was honest. And sometimes that's just refreshing, whether you agree with it or not. He stayed true to how he's always been.
You know, I think one thing, the timing of it going after some of the current England players a little bit is actually motivation leading up to next summer. So maybe he had a little bit behind that. I know he's Scottish, so he probably doesn't care, but...
Well, you know, he said when he was offered the England job, he was like, it was my perfect chance to relegate them.
Which was pretty funny. You know, I mean, I think for those players that, you know, especially Gerrard going in, this is going to probably be his last World Cup. So, you know.
Him and Lampard.
Him and Lampard. And he rolled Lampard a little bit, too. So.
Yeah, he did.
So we'll see.
I thought he packaged that deal with Gerrard and Lampard, though. So.
I thought it was funny that Brendan Rodgers does obviously defend Gerrard and criticizes Ferguson. yet, you know, saying, oh, things should be kept behind closed doors. But yet, you know, what was it? The beginning of last season, being Liverpool FC was on TV in America. So whether Rodson's comments have to be taken with a little bit of pinch of salt. I think just a little bit. Now, speaking of your guys' favourite subject, we'll get onto it now. 15 minutes to go to kickoff. Yep. We're not fortune tellers, but you guys are going to tell me who's going to win this game and why. Go for it, Brian.
I think City losing Vincent Kompany for this weekend and him still being out is a massive hole for them. I think their back line is very suspect. Mourinho's decided to start Schürrle on the wing. I think with his dribbling going at that line, it's very scary for that line. Now, Torre's always the X factor in this game.
Yeah.
In any game. The guy's unbelievable. So I was hoping that Mourinho would put Mikel in the middle with Lampard. He's decided to go with Ramirez and Lampard.
Do you have the starting 11?
I do have the starting 11.
Oh, we're breaking news here.
Breaking news, starting 11.
Starting 11. Give me 1 sec. Sorry.
Brian always posts that on the North Texas Blues website, so our Facebook page, and that's where
I think it's a plus playing Ramirez instead of Mikel. Just my opinion.
So obviously check Ivanovic, Cahill, Terry, and Cole. So Cole's back. He's fit.
Absolutely.
Which is good.
That's
huge. Oh, my phone just...
Was it Lampard, Ramirez,
Ramirez, Schürrle, Oscar, Hazard, Torres.
Oh, Torres starts.
Nando.
I told you he was going to start. See if
he's in form, man.
Yeah, let's see if he can bring some of that cup form to the Premier League today.
Okay. He's a menace in Europe.
He's the Europa League's top goal scorer.
Yeah.
Brian, okay, before we go any further, can you tell us about North Texas Blues and the... This pub is where you guys are situated, right?
Yeah, this is where we're situated. We're at Staggering Irishman here in North Dallas, Frankfort, and Preston. Great little spot. Been open for a few years. It's the host to us, the North Texas Blues, as well as a lot of FC Dallas away games are shown here. Dallas Beer Guardians are this their home pub, as well as the huge thing is the American Outlaws' home is here at Staggering Irishman. So all the U.S. national team games are shown here. Big crowds in here for that. Good times for that too. So
and how did you get involved in North Texas Blues?
You know, I found them Googling just years ago, finding the message board on the Chelsea in America website, asked where they're watching matches, met up with about 10 of them during the Dallas Cup. And the Chelsea youth squad was in town. We actually went to the team hotel and watched a match at the hotel bar. And some of the younger players came down and watched the match with us. Eva was there.
Is she as beautiful in person?
Oh my God, man! that was the highlight of that day. Is getting to meet Eva. You know, got involved, met Beth who's kind of the godmother of Chelsea in America. She's local here. Met her. Carrie runs the group here locally, and Carrie needed some help. And so I took over social media stuff, really, is kind of how I got involved first on that side. So I kind of run all that stuff in the back scenes.
On the back scenes. Well, get to...
NorthTexasBlues.com at NTX Blues. Sorry.
Plug it up.
Shameless.
Shameless plug.
Hey, plug it up.
Plug it up. West, tell me how this game's going to go. You think they're definitely going to win? Can you predict a scoreline for me?
I think it's probably going to be 3-2, and I'm going to go with Chelsea. You know, I'm a big fan of Toure and Kun Aguero.
Yes.
And Kun Aguero is as lethal right now as anybody except for Zlatan. But, he's killing it, and he's gonna cause our back line some problems. I mean, he's tough to get off the ball. He's quick. He's gonna cause us trouble. Like you said, Yaya Toure is always an X factor. I mean, he just controls games so well from the center of the pitch. But I'm thinking that we'll be all right with our midfield. Like you said, Schürrle. I mean, what, 3 weeks ago I was dogging Schürrle a little bit. And I was just like, kind of, why is this guy out here? And he's over the last 3 weeks, he's just killed it.
I'm shocked he's gotten as much playing time as he has.
Really?
I mean, when he came in this summer, I really didn't think. I'm German. My mother's from Berlin. I follow the German squad.
Did you think it was going to be like a Marin situation where you learn?
I thought he would get a little bit more playing time than Marin because Marin didn't find the pitch at all. But.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that's helped him so much is his pace. And that's, I mean,
so
the way
fast.
When that counterattack, and that's what Mourinho likes, when that counterattack goes and you got Oscar, Hazard, and Schürrle flying down the field – I mean, it's lethal.
Now, and I mean, to ask you guys, I know the game's in 10 minutes. Last question, but you guys can talk as much as you want about it. Can a team win the Premier League without a top striker? Because that seems to be the one question mark on Chelsea's title contendership.
Here's the thing, and we're finding goals other places. We're not far from the top. Before the weekend started, we were second, 2 points back. And I don't think that we've played our best game yet. Absolutely. So that should say something. You know, if they can find the goals, that obviously will increase that form of having your best players out there playing is at their top level. But I don't think we've been there yet, and we were only 2 points back for the weekend. So I think that's a sign of what's going on in the Premier League right now, that the goals are coming from other places. They don't have to come for your striker. We won trophies last season doing that. So I don't know, you know. It's yeah.
That's a slight praise for Rafa Benitez.
But like, no, well,
Rafa. Going back to, I think we can definitely win the win the Premier League without an out and out striker. And I think it just has to do with the prolific scoring ability of the attacking midfielders that we do have. Also, just if the strikers can just clean up, that's all we need. Just clean up the goals around the net, deflections, things of that nature. If they just take care of that, with Oscar, Hazard, Schürrle taking plenty of shots and being highly accurate for midfielders, I think we'll be just fine.
Go ahead.
Oscar under Mourinho has been.
Yes, he has been.
I accused him of being lazy last season, and I thought he was lazy at times. But man, him under Mourinho is something different. It really is.
And I think performers this season has been Oscar, and I would say probably Ramsey at Arsenal have really been outstanding.
Agreed.
I mean, outside of 42.5 million pound Mesut Ozil, which is slightly different. Yeah, to end the segment, thank you guys for being on the show this week. I know there's
thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Brian. I know we got 7 minutes before the kickoff, so I wanted to end on that note. Gio, thank you so much again, my friend, the staggering Irishman, North Texas Blues. What's the website, Brian?
NorthTexasBlues.com, at NTX Blues on Twitter.
Okay. Oh, here they come, Chelsea.
All right.
Chelsea.
There they go.
That's the best choir I've heard for some years.
There they go.
Oh, God. And it goes on. Thank you, guys. It's out. Oh, go to Twitter at On The Ball Show, the Facebook On The Ball Soccer Podcast on the Facebook, and comment, and we will see you next week.
System.